Don't say.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is brought to you by GoToMyPC. Oh, the holidays. You know, you think about it for a second. You have parties and shopping, time with families and friends. But for some of us, holidays don't mean that business just stops, right? I mean, you could be traveling during the holidays or, you know, maybe you need some time off and you need to still stay connected to your work. I plan on using GoToMyPC to access my home computer, my business. You know, when I'm visiting the in-laws, sneak aside and kind of check things out. I can access any file or program. I don't need to haul my laptop with me or copy important data and documents to a flash drive, because GoToMyPC gives me peace of mind because I can really just access anything on my computer from anywhere, which is great. So the nice thing for the holidays is that GoToMyPC can get them, and they're giving you a free 30-day trial. Just for our listeners, you can try it. GoToMyPC, free for 30 days. That's a month. Entire month, 30 days of unlimited remote access for free. And for this special offer, you know where to go, but I'm going to tell you anyway. It's gotomypc.com/podcast. That's gotomypc.com/podcast for a 30-day free trial. And of course, we want to make sure to take care of our sponsors. GoToMyPC, great sponsor of this show. And check them out. I think you'll enjoy it very much. And welcome to the Disciplined Investor Podcast. This is Andrew Horowitz. And where are we? We're, it's end of November, holiday season, post-Thanksgiving. Hope you all had a great Thanksgiving, a great turkey day, a great time with your families and friends. And you spent some time stocking up for the cold winter that's upon us, or about to be upon us at least. Episode number 137 is where we're at on the Disciplined Investor. And I have so much to talk to you about. Man, there's a lot going on out there. There is craziness when it comes to sovereign debt right now. I have a few stocks I want to talk to you about. I want to tell you about the week that was and tell you some of the statistics and some of the things that I saw and some of the things we wrote about and give you a few stocks to think about. I want to talk to you about the dollar today, because the dollar has been, boy, has that dollar been beaten up pretty badly or what? There's a great article by Porter Stansberry. You know, that's Frank Curzio's firm that he works with now. He put out a great article on something that I want you to listen to about the dollar and understanding where it's going potentially. I want to talk to you about some of the indicators that we put up as well, tell you about Frank's new podcast, Frank Curzio's podcast, and go over, of course, Dubai. Lots to talk about, lots of things to go over. McClellan Oscillator is now at about a negative 84, which is signaling the continuation of this sell-off here, or at least the advanced decliners being a little bit towards the decliner side, as you've noticed, especially with what happened at the end of last week. Boy, that was pretty shocking, the information. I got to tell you about that, because that was an interesting story, what happened there with Dubai and Dubai World. So let's see, where do we start? Lots to talk about. Okay, well, by the way, it's hopefully, by the time you hear this, it's going to be after the fact. I don't know where we're going to come in, but I want to thank you for taking the time to vote for the 5th Annual Podcast Awards. I don't know if we'll get one. I don't know. We were in the People's Choice Award for the Disciplined Investor, and DH Unplugged also had us in there for, let's see, that was business. And the winning investor was for education, actually. Kind of, I think, goes between education and business, but nonetheless. Let's start with this. Let's talk about the week that was. So the week, we saw the S&P 500 flat for the week. Right, it was up really nicely on Monday. Great article by my friend Trader Mark, who looked at this incredible. It's really interesting. This last 5 or 6 weeks, the S&P 500, the domestic stock markets, were up dramatically on Mondays. We don't exactly know what that has to do with anything, but up dramatically on Mondays. And what's interesting about that is if you look at the Friday in the last hour or so in the markets, you see that there was this ramp up of stocks in the last hour or so. And then if you kind of put the Monday stock market, you know, butted up next to the Friday stock market. It looks almost like a continuation of the upward trend. We'll see what happens here on Monday and Tuesday of next week, because if it is a similar type of situation that we saw, you're going to probably see some selling off. Now, the thing that will obviously rescue that will be if Abu Dhabi and comes out, and maybe even the United Arab Emirates come out and say that they're going to rescue Dubai. And again, we're going to get into that in a second. That could help things, and that could help what was a massive sell-off in Asia and Europe, as well as a pretty big sell-off in the domestic markets as well last week. But the S&P was flat. Europe was pretty ugly. Mixed, though. Asia was really in bad shape. Japan was down. The Nikkei was down 5% last week. The Hong Kong Hang Seng down 6%. China was down dramatically. You know, Greece is now in an official bear market, down over 20%. They were down like 6% or something like that. Thursday and Friday. And, you know, one of the things that was really striking about this week, again, was that we saw volume, a very good indicator. You have to watch volume on the NYSE, the New York Stock Exchange, or look at volume on the S&P 500, a broad-based volume metric, maybe on the NASDAQ. And again, we see what's called distribution days. Friday, in particular, we saw 99.2% of all the stocks in the S&P 500 were down. Only four stocks were up, and just barely. In the NYSE, 96% of stocks were down, and about, let's see, that's out of 1,826 stocks, about 45 or so stocks were up. But as a matter of fact, what's really kind of concerning is that most of the day, the S&P 500 on Friday spent at 100% of the stocks were down. Broad-based selling was going on, indiscriminate selling, as we call it, very much similar to the indiscriminate buying that goes on sometimes. But I haven't seen 100% day in a long, long time. I talked about on Frank Curzio's podcast. By the way, now I'll tell you, Frank Curzio has a new podcast. We put a post up about it. You can find it on iTunes as well. He invited me on for the inaugural podcast, and I talked about some of the various indicators, the oscillators, that were the first time since March last week starting to roll over a bit. For our clients over at the Disciplined Investor Managed Growth Strategy, also for our clients at Horowitz & Company, we put some, we've obviously kept some cash for some time, and we've had some bonds in the portfolio for some of the portfolios, depending on risk. But in our aggressive portfolios in particular, we put some hedges on. We hedged using RWM. I think I told you about that. We had, up until this week, about 10% position there over the last few weeks. That's the small cap Russell 2000. That's the single time, not a leveraged. We also had the S&P 500. We added to that this week, earlier in the week as the markets were moving up. And we also added to our small caps. And we have a few hedge on some shorts on some stocks too. But that helped us. I mean, Friday, we hardly were down on Friday at all. I think we were down 20 basis points on Friday. So what was really, I think the thing that we had to notice was also that volume on the down days has been very, very high compared to the volume on the up days. That indicates to me, once again, that the commitment to buying is not as strong as the commitment to selling right now. Now, Lowry's, which is L-O-W-R-Y, Lowry's puts out an indication. They look at the buying pressure, selling pressure, and they really haven't shown too much of pressure lately on the selling side. They're saying that there's still a lot of buying pressure. We know that, right? We've seen these dips in the market, these 4% dips on broad-based markets, 3%, 4%, 5%, and then they're being bought up and taken to new highs again. The question is, will that continue? That's really what's going on right now. And is this a sign that we're seeing the first time the price oscillate of the S&P 500 rolling over? Is it a sign that maybe something's a little different? Was the Dubai situation really a catalyst to what is going to happen right now? There are so many bulls out right now. We have indicators up that we put on the website that I'm going to talk about, and I'll tell you where to go. The bullish sentiment right now is as high as it was in September of 2008, although, and even back further than that, when times were really good. And when, you know, all of a sudden we see that reversal. Oftentimes the bullish indicator is a contrarian sign because it's really showing a lot of complacency. The VIX was at $20 or $21, exactly on about a week and a half ago. And it went up about 15, 18% on Friday. And all of a sudden, the fear factor has been very, very volatile, but it's starting to creep back in all of a sudden. Now, what happened was that the catalyst that we saw was that Dubai, which here's what was really kind of strange about this. On Wednesday, we saw the news. The news came out on Wednesday that Dubai, who has about $80 billion of outstanding debt to that they use to build all those properties and the things that they have outstanding right now. And what happened is the 59 billion dollars of debt is coming due, and they have to either refinance it or pay it off. Well, surprise, surprise, they announced that they need a delay in paying that off, paying the debt, paying the interest, etc. Now, we don't know the details on this because not all of it's extremely clear. Now they're just talking about a delay. What does that mean? Does that mean they're going to default? Does that mean that business is and construction is stopping there? You know, there was a time in Dubai that I think they had, what did they have? They had about a third of the cranes of the world were in Dubai. Those cranes that were building all their buildings. Dubai is an amazing place. Dubai doesn't really have much. They don't have much oil. They had some money and some oil to start things off, but they didn't have enough money and oil to really get things continuing. And what happened was that they borrowed a lot of money thinking that, you know, wow, things are going to be great. Times are going to be great. They really went overboard. They have things like tennis courts on roofs and ski slopes indoors. And, you know, you go on and on. You've heard about it. The only 7-star hotel in the world. And that whole region, it was like the centerpiece of the whole region. It was this amazing technological and architectural, just a wonderful abilities that were presented there. And it was a place that was for, it was a bit of a paradise in the middle of a desert. Let's I guess say what it was, a bit of a oasis in the middle of the desert. But we wondered all, and I don't know if you ever did, but did you ever think that maybe it was a bit aggressive for the region? The region's a bit more conservative, but it was a bit aggressive. It was very different than how usually you see many of the countries in that area living. Well, now they get themselves in a heap of trouble. They're really the aggressive ones. They're really the ones that are standing on top of the mountain and saying, hey, look at me, look at me. And now all of a sudden they're in big trouble. There's question whether or not they're going to be bailed out. The world is saying, wait a second, we're talking about a sovereign debt default here? We're talking about going back and winding back the clock to times like when we saw Iceland and the concerns about many of the countries in Eastern Europe? Is that what we're talking about here? And Dubai now is in a real big bind, because if they do want to be bailed out, or if they're going to be bailed out by Big Brother, let's say that by Abu Dhabi and that or whoever it's going to be, there's going to be a lot of concessions. They're going to have to give up a lot. If they're not bailed out and made to use as some kind of an example, some kind of a, you know, hey, this is not how you were supposed to operate. You were not supposed to spend over your head. We didn't condone this. We're not going to condone this. And we do not want to send a message around that we will encourage moral risk and taking this kind of risk with money in any time, whether it's good or bad. And what you did was reckless. Are they going to try to teach them a lesson? And if so, who's going to suffer? Well, a lot of the European banks, and if that's what happened with Europe got pretty shaken up. There's some areas in Asia that also, China doesn't have a good amount, so they're not really concerned. But at the same time, Europe, ING was down about 19%. Lloyd's was down, I think Lloyd's was down about 9% just on Friday, and they got beaten up a couple of days before. But the strange thing is that we heard the story on Wednesday, and our markets didn't at all even flinch. Now think about that. We hear about this on Wednesday, and I read about it on Wednesday, and I said, boy, what? That's kind of interesting. And I'm looking around trying to see if I see any signs in the market. There's a little bit of spook going on, a little bit of concern, a little bit of fear, panic, anything. No, the VIX is flat. The volume is okay. Markets are doing their thing. The only thing I could say was that we saw some good numbers on the unemployment. Initial claims finally came in under 500,000 for the week. And we saw mixed bag. We saw durable goods that didn't look good at all. We have an image of that, a chart of that on our website. They're falling down. Personal spending was up a little bit. So it was a mixed bag. Futures were up dramatically on Wednesday morning, but they came down and actually went negative for a little while and then kind of just slightly up on Wednesday. And then there was really nothing. Nothing happened. But then on Wednesday night, boy, things erupted around the world. We saw Asia off 4 and 5%, various countries. Europe was doing horribly. Again, Greece was doing terrible. And then again, Thursday night, we were closed Thursday, of course. Thursday night, our futures were down about 2.75% pre-market and overnight. And the dollar, which was at a 14-month low, it was a 14-month high to the Japanese yen, and it was on a significant low. I think it was 14 months also. I think it was both the same. It was on a significant low against most other, the basket of currencies, and it breached the 150 mark against the euro. Now, we just a couple of days before, I said, you know, this is getting a little out of hand. One of the things we're seeing is gold is skyrocketing and metals are skyrocketing, and the risk trade when it comes to the carry trade for the dollar is on, because the dollar just keeps sinking and sinking. And what's going to happen here? Is the dollar just going to implode? You know, Peter Schiff talks about it. Harry Dent talks about it. Is this just going to, you know, be the end of the dollar and here's where we go, that the recovery is on? Nobody wants to be in the dollar. They realize that we're printing money at an extreme rate. We are just, you know, racking up incredible amounts of debt, and our deficit is just flying and flying, and there's no end in sight. We're coming out with new programs. Who knows if we have a new stimulus program that will be there. We were doing something with our health care. Who knows what's going to happen with cap and trade? I mean, who knows? And the dollar just kept on a death spiral down, which helped out the markets. And I was talking to Kevin here, and I said, Kevin, you know, one of the things that's going to happen is if this dollar, if you look at the relationship of the dollar, the markets, U.S., domestic, emerging, international, if you look at the relationship of the dollar to the trading that's going on, we are clearly seeing a very highly correlated, a very highly related trade. And if this dollar starts turning in the other direction and there's a bit of a flight to safety for whatever reason, or if there's a short squeeze on the dollar, it's going to be a big short squeeze on the dollar. And we're going to see world markets sell off really hard, which is exactly what happened. The dollar went from about $1.50 and change on the euro, came down to about 1.48 overnight, a tremendous move on a currency. One of the reasons that happened was that Japan reiterated that they felt strongly about the dollar. And at the same time, they also mentioned that they are going to keep an eye on things, because what's happening is the constant movement of their currency up. That's the play right now. The yen is getting so highly valued that it's making their exports extremely, extremely expensive. And they're being, to a point, they're just totally uncompetitive. And the competitive nature of what they have to do for exports, and in this environment that exports are falling terribly as it is really bad for them. Now, China has the right idea. China pegged the dollar to the U.S. dollar to the yuan. And that's giving them the opportunity to stay on an even keel with us. Now, we don't like that, because no matter what we do and how we move our dollar, of course, not manipulate our dollar, but move our dollar, is not giving them any pains at all like it is Japan. And Japan is very worried, and they have talked about that they're keeping an eye and may have to enter the markets to control the ascension of the dollar for the point of being more competitive. Now, that's interesting. We also saw this week, from a currency standpoint, we also saw a devaluation. We saw a devaluation of the dong in Vietnam. And they're trying to control the overall movement of their inflation, because they have out-of-control inflation. Now, their country is clearly not on a path to massive recovery right now, and it could have been a very bad move by them, but they did, in fact, devalue their currency because they need to stay competitive as well, and they want to make sure that inflation doesn't become a real concern over there and they're smelling a problem. So we have currency concerns in that we have the talk of Bernanke, talking about how he's going to keep an eye in his latest Fed minutes, keep an eye on the dollar, whatever that exactly means. Maybe it was a bit of pandering to the Chinese, who said that we got to control it because it's getting out of control and getting out of hand. That was commented last week, that they felt that we are letting our dollar slip too low, and that could be a very big problem for them and for the rest of the world. We're seeing other countries say, in not so many words, that they're not going to buy any more dollars. They think what we're doing is reckless. Just look at what India did, buying a massive amount of gold. I got to get you this. Let me find this article. Hold on a second, because do you know how much they made on that recent gold trade already? I got it. Let me find this here. This is an article by Porter Stansberry in his investment advisory letter. Again, this is over at the place where Frankie works now, Frankie Curzio. Let's see here. And he says that, I got to find this for you. This is really neat. Let's see. I should have had this ready. This is bad. Okay, here. They bought a total of a little over 6.4 million ounces of gold. Paid about $6.7 billion at $1,041. They made a chunk of money if you think about where it is today. So they made close to what, $100 per ounce? So we're talking about close to $600 million. Not bad. Is that right? $60 million or $600 million? Let's see, So, what's also interesting is that there was a time that the central banks of various countries wanted to keep prices of gold kind of below the $1,000 level, and that was blown out by India. And the question is Brazil and some of the other countries that are trying to get away from the dollar going to follow suit with what India did? And is India going to buy more? Because there's some chatter around that India may be buying more gold. Now, in this letter that let me just start you to tell you what it says. It says, a run on the dollar, you have days, not weeks, to escape. And again, this is Porter Stansberry's letter. He talked about something called the Greenspan-Giudotti rule. Now, you have to get it. You should probably try to get this newsletter if you can. And he talks about how basically, this is a rule that most people don't know about, but yet George Soros, as an example, knows well about what this is and was able to do things like, for example, break the pound in 1992, giving about $1 billion profit. And these are things that were used by many well-known and very smart people. And he talks about how this whole process is going to end up giving the dollar a real black eye, because there's no way, as he sees it right now, that the dollar can actually stay in good shape with this Greenspan-Giudotti. I don't want to go through all the details of this, but basically what he's saying is that under no circumstances can countries be involved with another country that has so much debt and inability to pay their debts. We're talking about if you think about the U.S. as a company, it's highly leveraged and unable under most circumstances to really quickly pay their debt off. So when we look at a company, we look at a current ratio and we look at how their ability to pay off short-term debt. When we compare that and look at that in terms of the United States, they have very little ability to pay off their debt at all because of the fact that it's so high and only going higher. And then you add to the fact of the deficit that we have as well. How is the U.S. going to be a country that can be relied on to lend money to? And at the same time, why would you want to hold your property, your bonds, your stock? Why would you want to hold it in dollars? That's what he's going through here. Now, you've heard this story before. This is a story that is screamed from the rafters by Peter Schiff and a few others. We talked about that earlier. But, you know, now what's going to be the alternate currency? They're talking about this. Could it be gold? Could it be, you know, right now some other metal or some other world currency? And, you know, I think we saw this week also that the U.S. Mint is stopping sales. They ran out of gold coins. And that's a really interesting sign that there's almost a stampede. You know, you hear about gold all the time. Now, this is very similar to when I heard about technology back in the 1999, when I heard about the real estate in, well, we'll say 2004, 2005, and then clearly in 2007, everybody was a real estate agent. Everybody was a stock trader and a day trader of technology stocks back in 1998 and 1999. And that all changed when things kind of hit the fan. How many people are going to be stuck with gold? I am not suggesting that gold is a bad investment by any means. As a matter of fact, we hold gold, we hold silver in our portfolios. But at the same time, how far is it going to go? What happens, like we saw on Friday, when the dollar reverses, gold came down pretty hard, even though it was the whole reason of what happened on Friday was that it was a world crisis. It was a crisis of confidence again in the credit abilities and the payment abilities of a sovereign nation. And that would automatically make you think that people would flock to gold, but it wasn't the case. It worked opposite of the dollar. So therefore, what it's telling me right there is that the dollar is still, by many, seen to be a very strong investment holding position if, in fact, things get ugly. And gold right now ran up due to the fact that the dollar has sold off. Same thing with oil. All right, we beat that up enough. Let's talk about a couple other things. Let's see. I had a couple things on my list that I want to talk to you about. Lots to talk about today. Talked about ING having a lot of trouble and Lloyd's, of course. I talked about that. Okay, let's talk about GDP. GDP came in, and the final numbers, the revised numbers came in last week, and this was very disturbing. I don't know if you saw this, but GDP was quoted about 3.5% of growth in the final quarter, in the last quarter, when we saw it. And then, that's, of course, that was the almost final, if you will, but then you have to come up with a revised number. And I don't know if you saw this, but it was revised downward by about 20%. 20% to 2.8. Now, here's the rub. If you take out the stimulus and you take out the cash clunkers, you take out all the things that we put in, we're talking about a minuscule gain, meaning that the economy is still on life support. Consumers are still not consuming at a significant level. They're not, even though it was better, no question that it's better. But this whole malarkey about the GDP, I want you to do me a favor. Look at GDP, but the press's and the media's fascination with GDP as the only thing that's so important to figure out if a country is out of their recession is BS. It's terrible. There is no reason to be looking only at that for a lot of different reasons. Least that I say that it doesn't mean that there's anything changed. It could be and we talk about this, the mathematical calculation of GDP. Because we went off of a cliff, you know, follow this now in your mind. You go off of a cliff and you have such a low amount, it's such a trough in GDP that the quarter after quarter number is going to look good eventually when you compare it to such a horrible situation. What do they say? The patient is dead. He's less dead. He's almost dead. He's kind of dead. I mean, it's all, in a way, he's dead. So they're trying to mix it up and say, well, it's a lot less worse than it was. That's junk. You know, do you ever hear any media saying something like, well, it's less good. It's more bad. No, they never say that. We saw several numbers last week. We saw durables that were clearly more bad, less good. But we don't hear about that. We saw the Empire State Index come out last week. There's three of them, the Richmond, there's the Empire, the Chicago. You know, we saw that come out last week, the Empire now, at a 1. And we're like, what? A 1? It was 8. I think it was supposed to come in somewhere around 5, and it was a 1. Not a good number. You combine this all with revisions, we're still high unemployment, and as a matter of fact, the Fed minutes that came out said that they thought a couple of things. This is right with the GDP, it came out the same day that they saw that the decline in the dollar was orderly, whatever that means, and they projected that we're going to have heightened level of unemployment through 2012, upwards of 8% in 2012, far more than they predicted the last number of times. They have been off more times than they've been right. So I'm not sure why we're supposed to believe them at this point. And these are just projections. They really don't know. Lots can happen between now and then. They're assuming that nothing changes and we're just going to kind of move directionally and almost on a linear basis up through 2012. Well, what happens if we have these crises like we just saw in Dubai? That changes the whole game, doesn't it? That changes what we think is going to go on, and all of a sudden we see a stock market implode, whether it's here or there, or we see all of a sudden a significant change in trade, maybe because of some country is mad at us or somebody else due to maybe protectionism, which we're seeing pop up all over the place. Maybe we're going to see oil prices either skyrocket or drop down. Whatever the case may be, these are just projections. And you have to think that, you know, they've been wrong so many times right now that we have to take everything they're saying with more than just a grain of salt, a block of salt. I mean, an entire block of salt. Okay? And now we're seeing a lot of numbers come in on the economic side that are much more, I will say, negative than they were. They were definitely getting better for a while. Now they're not, especially post Cash for Clunkers and post the mortgage applications were down, even though that new home sales were up. And you got to look at all the good and the bad. We can't just say, the press's fascination with just looking at the good. You have to look at both sides. Very important to be neutral when it comes to looking at the data that's out there. Okay, we talked about GDP. That's a real concern. Business Week had a great article about that. As a matter of fact, before the GDP came out, they had an article, I think it was in, I have that here too somewhere. Let's see. Got it. This is the November 9th Business Week. And the cover page says, GDP, trick or treat. Why tough times for educated workers signal that economic growth is overstated. Very interesting. And it was a great article in Business Week, and it talks about how, this is before the GDP revision came out. So they were obviously a little bit clear on what was going on. Consumer confidence, by the way, is okay, but not great. So this is an article by Michael Mandel. And he talks about the most comprehensive gauge of the U.S. economic activity is broken by overlooking cuts in research and development, product design, and worker training. GDP is greatly overstated and overstating the economy's strength. So he starts off with a riddle about if a scientist or engineer is laid off, does it affect the gross domestic product? And it talks about how the survey of analysts anticipate a 3.2% growth rate, but he's saying that's just not true and it's not going to happen and it's really just way, way overstated. And since we are being trained to look at GDP as something like all of a sudden GDP goes positive and we all have jobs again, everything's great and the stock market will go up to just forever and bonds are going to be good, that is just not true. Look what happened back in 2003 or so when all of a sudden GDP went positive and we were out of the recession. Markets came down pretty strong and the unemployment lasted a while. The difference between now and then was then there was a lot of credit available and the housing boom just started. There was new houses being built, which obviously created jobs, which used up materials. That is not going to happen this time around. Whether or not the housing market comes back for houses that are currently owned, or whether or not this is going to be a market that has something different and maybe it's apartments, whatever it is, we're going to see a much, much different recovery this time. They're calling it a jobless recovery, but a much different recovery. All right, so let's go into some stock tips. You want some stock tips? I got a couple of them. I talked about one of these on DH Unplugged. And if you haven't listened to DH Unplugged, I encourage you to listen to it. That's myself and John C. Dvorak. And we talk about once a week and we have an open discussion, kind of an open mic, heart-to-heart discussion about business issues, political issues, just the entire business landscape, if you will. And we talked about the Chinese drywall situation last week. I really encourage you to listen to that. We also talked about the difference between, this is how diverse it is. We also talked about the difference between carving a turkey with a regular, sharp, good chef knife and an electric knife. And he couldn't believe that I used an electric knife. But these are the kind of things that we talk about. Well, not so much the electric knife or kitchen appliances or utensils. But we talk about, the markets, give stock tips, talk about in-depth discussion of politics. I think you enjoy it if you haven't listened to it. It's available on iTunes, DH Unplugged. All right, I was kind of did that as I got ready to talk about a couple of these stocks. And one of them I talked about is Long Top Financial. I don't know if you've heard of this stock. But this is a symbol LFT. LFT, and we'll put this on. We'll put some charts on the website, thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And by the way, you need to get over there during the week and maybe sign up for the RSS feed so you can see what happens, because we talk about these throughout the week and give you ideas. You would have picked up, what did we talk? Oh, St. Joe. I call it St. Joe. STJ. It's not St. Joe Paper. That's a different company, of course. But St. Jude. I always call it St. Joe. I don't know why. STJ is a medical device. They dropped down pretty dramatically, and they had a big gap. We talked about they were going to fill the gap, and by golly, they did right after we talked about it. I think you would have made about 7 or 8%. And we also talked about a couple of different stocks, this being one of them. We talked about the next one also. So Long Top Financial is a company that we own for our clients. We've owned it for a while. Not too long, but a reasonable amount of time. And by the way, one more little thing. If you're kind of tired of managing your own portfolio, and if you want to look for a different alternative, someone who's trading, not buying and holding, someone who's hedging, and you want to see what we're doing, minimum $50,000, check it out over at thedisciplinedinvestor.com. We have a 14-minute virtual tour, and you can see what we're doing there and talk about how we choose our stocks. So this is one of them that came through the screens. It's a Chinese company and a developer of account management, transaction processing, and enterprise software, primarily, though, for the financial institutions. Now, here's what I like about that. It appears to us, from what we're reading and seeing, and from the talk of the Chinese government, that obviously there's a lot of lending going on, but at the same time, they're trying to not limit it, but control it. And one of the things they're going to need to do is make sure that they have a handle on what's happening. So if there is this transaction processing, account management, and overall review and reporting on financial institutions and financial situations, this company can benefit, potentially benefit. It is a mid cap at about $1.8 billion market capitalization, about 51 million shares that are outstanding. It doesn't trade a lot. It trades about maybe 500 to a million shares per day. So you don't want to buy anything too large of a position. But here's some interesting things about it. No debt at all. Management owns about 58%. We like when management has skin in the game. The earnings per quarter increases have been just tremendous. From 07, they were earning about 21 cents a quarter. They're earning about 40 now. That's a pretty good run when we're talking about this environment. And mutual funds and institutions are starting to gain on growing and buying this. PE ratio of 31, but its growth rate is about 68%. So the PEG ratio is about a half. And what we're seeing here is that, you know, overall the fundamentals look good, but the chart, if you look at the weekly chart as an example, and again we'll put that on the website for this show notes for this show, you'll see that this broke out of a really great consolidation. It's been consolidating since about June, maybe about March, April. It's been consolidating, slightly up and consolidating, finding a nice trend line, and it just broke to just about a new high from the IPO back in December of 07. And this has been moving very nicely. It does have a range. For example, Friday was down 6% on the open, finished up 1.5%. We actually bought some more right at the open there, right after the open on Friday. But if you look at this, it's been tracking. It's 50-day and it's 10-week moving average. It's sloping up, which is good from a technical standpoint. It's making a series of higher highs and higher lows, which is also a good thing from a technical standpoint. It's getting good volume on the up days, the down days. Not so much, but it's looking very strong. Next earnings are coming out in February, so you have plenty of time not to worry about it. And they blew out their earnings. Boy, did they blow out their earnings. And they guided higher for next year and next quarter as well. And when that happened, it moved up very well. And this thing is really, in my opinion, is poised to break out here even more. It's been held back right now by the markets because if you think about it, the Asian markets have been really kind of drifting downward for the last few weeks, but this has been moving higher and higher. And I do think that because right now we're seeing the relative strength of this position hold up so nicely in the face of all the problems in the markets, when we have some good days, this could do very, very well. And even if we don't have good days, if we have just some average days, not a lot of volatility, it could do very well. So we have, you know, like a 2% position, 2.2% position in our portfolios. I would try to buy this on any pullback. If it comes back a little bit, maybe it's down 3% in a day, you know, because it does move around a bit. You know, pick up a little bit and average into it slowly. When you look at the stock, if you're looking at the chart, you're talking about somewhere of support about, where is it trading now? About 36. Support's about 30. There's some good support. Back down to 26. There's a lot of support. I think we own it about 27 and change. But there's a lot of support at 26, 27. 30 is clearly a lot of support. So if you pick it up now, you have the potential of about a 12% downstroke. I would say to you again that by looking at this, you know, there is the chance for it to come back down and try to test its 20-day at about 31 and change, something like that. It's about 31. Let me see what exactly that number is. Yeah, 31 and change is short-term. 29 is its 50-day. So I think that's something that you can really work with. Now, remember something that for our clients and what we do, we don't really believe in just buying and holding it forever. You know, we're going to buy it. We're going to hopefully take some profit. If it moves down against us, we're either going to do one of two things. If we really have a commitment to the stock, we're going to increase our position and then make sure that we have stops in appropriately. And if it moves up and we think that it's moving against us anytime, we may actually move out, wait for it to settle out, and then buy it again. Okay? The next stock that I like, we've been tracking this for a while, and we made a mistake not getting into it earlier because we've watched it, and every time it came down, we were about to buy it. We said, let's see how this plays out, and then just went away, moved away from us again. It's Discovery.com, Discovery Channel, Discovery Communications, if you will. D-I-S-C-A, DISCA, D-I-S-C-A. Now, there's a B version of this, too. There's a couple of different ones. They're going to actually probably end up bringing those together. There's another stock that is another tracking stock, and because of some corporate structure of theirs, but it's the A shares, the A class. Trades about 1.6 million, 1.7 million shares per day. Here's what I like about it. First of all, the stock chart looks just great. Have you noticed, this is annoying, good and bad. I think I've talked about this before, but have you noticed the amount of commercials that are on cable and regular television these days? It's downright annoying. It really is. But that's good for a stock like this, good for a company like this. What's better is that Oprah Winfrey announced that she's leaving terrestrial television, if you will, and leaving her show on regular TV and moving to cable. And where's she moving? She's moving to Discovery. I think she's taking over the Health Channel and having her own show. Now, we're talking about tens and tens of millions of viewers that she has. And where are they going to go? Many of them may not have cable because they get traditional television. They're going to have to buy cable. Well, so we own Comcast. We just picked up Comcast a couple of weeks back. We're hoping that that deal with Vivendi and NBC goes through. And then beyond that, we have Discovery. Okay, and Discovery because Oprah Winfrey is going to be joining them, like we said. And let's talk about it a little bit. Now, the stock has been on a tear. It's been looking very good since, last December. Now, a little bit too vertical, but still a quality stock, from about 10 to about 30 in that period of time. That's a pretty significant move. It had a big drop-off also during that December time, like a lot of technology and media-related stocks did. P ratio is about 30, a little bit hot, but again, very poised to break out. It's breaking out above its about $30 range, which is its top point back in September of 2007. The earnings look great. Looks like we're going to see on EPS basis from 2007 when it was 31 cents, 2009 estimated to be 129, 2010 1.59. That changes the story when we look at the PE ratio, doesn't it? Because the forward PE ratio looks great. Debt is about 60%, a little bit high there. We like to look at the volume, and again, the volume's tailing off a little bit, but the volume on the up days is pretty strong, which is a good signal. Actually, if you look at a ratio on the up and the down, we're talking about 1.5, which is great. That's really towards the positive side. The number of institutions owning this is growing, although management only owns about 2%. That's a little light. So we have a small position that we entered into this, and we do like that short interest is about 3.3 days, and it's growing, which means that the opportunity for a short squeeze is there. Shares outstanding about 83 million, 85 million are in float, $9 billion company. Now, just to jog your minds about this, you know, if you watched any of those shows on the Discovery Channel, maybe you watch, Mythbusters, or maybe you watch Man vs. Wild on that channel, I think. You may watch, Lobsterman or the Crab Guys. It's called, Deadliest Catch. I mean, there's a lot of great shows that are a lot of reality shows, but the Discovery Channel and the Discovery High Def and their various channels are just amazing. And the advertising is coming in, and you know, many of these companies are looking to get to the consumer, and that's how they're doing it. And we like those too. So we'll put some charts on there, and I want you to check it out. Don't buy anything at all unless you do the research. Please don't. Don't just buy anything. Do the research. These made it through our screens. They made it through our fundamentals, you know, the Quantafund, the Tecna. So with the quantitative screens, they made it through, the fundamental screens they made it through, and the technical screens they made it through. So let's switch over in the end. I want to talk to you about a few things. And what you can do is you can go over to these indicators that we put up. And there's a lot of them. Let's see here. I want to go through the indicators we're watching. I also have a post up on St. Jude, Atwood's Oceanics, and also on Oprah Light's Discovery, How to Profit. We'll try to link some of those. If not, just go on the site and search for it. I want to show you, there's something called Indicators We Are Watching. That is something we put up on a regular basis. And I did put up the this is last week's now. We talked about the volume. So I wanted to share that with you. And look how volume has not been holding, but also more importantly, the McClellan oscillator. I mentioned that before. And the McClellan oscillator is, again, making lower highs and lower lows, a short-term bearish signal. I put this up on Monday. So Monday was a good day, but the rest of the week kind of went sideways, then down to the end of the week, of course. And again, we didn't know there was going to be a Dubai, but the indicators were showing us that the selling pressure or the buying desire had been a lot lower than it's been. So that was the McClellan oscillator. Also, the volume indicators that we posted here, if you look at those, and it shows you that the volume is tapering off. But more importantly, I think I mentioned to you that this is the first time that we're seeing the various oscillators on the S&P start to roll over. That was a big concern. We also have a confluence of other indicators, including moving averages, as well as Fibonacci retracements. And all of these are on the Disciplined Investor. If you want to learn about what all these things mean, I describe these on the charts and take you through what that means. So check that out on thedisciplinedinvestor.com under the show notes. I'm going to keep this, that's a lot of information I just threw out at you. We're going to keep this short. No guests today. It's holiday time, but I do have coming up Andrew Ross Sorkin, who wrote that fabulous book and who is head deep in the whole banking crisis involved with everybody and has just an amazing amount of detail on what happened during that very, very difficult time. Also, Brian Shannon, who is a technical trader and a teacher, is coming on as well. And we have, who else is coming on soon? Tim Sykes, I talked to him recently, has a new site up. He wants to go through that. And lots going on, lots of great things coming up. So hopefully you're having a great Thanksgiving. I hope you didn't get too trampled in the Black Friday rush to buy gifts. And we'll kind of check in with you next week. And make sure to go to the show notes and check out all the things we talked about. And please, like I mentioned, I encourage you to get an RSS feed of the show. Or what is probably even better, here's a good thing. If you want to follow me on Twitter, Andrew Horowitz, one word, at Twitter. And what happens is that every time there's a post that's up or show notes or whatever it may be, you get an immediate Twitter and a link right back to it. So we have that set up so you can get it right away. It's Andrew Horowitz, and that's the Twitter handle that I have. So you can check that out. And I thank you for joining me today. And I wish you a wonderful, wonderful holiday and a wonderful week ahead. Be careful. We think there will be some very difficult market conditions with this latest revelation, we'll say, of Dubai. And that's why we're hedging our portfolios right now. We'll move them and remove them if it turns out that it is, in fact, contained. But right now, you know, you have to wonder what's going to happen moving forward. And the concern that we saw in the markets is not even funny when we see, 5, 6, 7% week and maybe even a 5% day on some of the market, the various markets around the world. So anyway, I wish you a great success in the week to come. Hopefully you helped. I helped you out in some of the areas looking at some of those positions. Check it out. We'll see you soon. Thanks for joining me on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.